My friends, this is Dr. Beter. Today is March 29, 1978, and this is my audio letter number 32. Over a century ago, in 1873, an inventor in New York began exhibiting a strange new device, which he said would convey the human voice through wires over long distances. Calling his invention a telephone, he tried to attract financial support. But it was reported in the press that well-informed people knew it was impossible to transmit the human voice by wire, that wires could transmit only dots and dashes, such as the Morse code. Furthermore, it was said that even if the so-called telephone could do this, it would be of no practical value. And so, having been condemned as a fraud by self-styled authorities, the inventor was bundled off to jail. The inventor was discredited, and for 3 more years the public was denied the opportunity to judge for itself about the merits of the telephone. And as an old Lebanese proverb says, the error of a scholar is like the wreck of a ship. It sinks and scuttles others with it. But far from being impossible, as claimed by the self-styled scholars of that day, the telephone was inevitable, an idea whose time had come. In 1876, another inventor, Alexander Graham Bell, unveiled a working model of the telephone. Today, Bell's name is a household word, and all the false prophets who had said, "It can't be done," are forgotten forever. Today, there are many self-proclaimed authorities who condemn as nonsense anything they don't understand. It happened with the telephone, the automobile, the airplane, space travel, and so on. Today, it is happening in regard to underwater missiles, particle beam weapons, floating Soviet cosmospheres, and other life and death matters. Today, our secret rulers are trying to cover up so many things in so many ways that it's becoming increasingly difficult to do so. As always, their own secret political and economic plans and maneuvers are kept under wraps until they are ready to spring on the unsuspecting public. Only now their plans no longer work smoothly as they once did. But beyond that, elaborate efforts are being mounted to hide from the public the disastrous military and space setbacks suffered by the United States in recent months. Soviet sabotage operations, about which I have been giving a warning for nearly a year, are now taking an increasing toll, and government spokesmen are working overtime to make exploding grain elevators, exploding factories, exploding refineries, exploding railroad tank cars, and explosions in power plants all seem unrelated. And to keep the lid on events related to Russia's total military domination of space, not only government personnel, but also selected congressional, academic, industrial, and scientific spokesmen are being pressed into service. They think that by siding with the Soviet Union, the winning side, they will end up being treated very well. But traitors are traitors and can never be trusted. So collaborators are always the first to be eliminated after a country is conquered. As for our secret rulers themselves, together with their intimates, the precedent they themselves established in the Nuremberg trials after World War II will be applied. In the aftermath of the coming nuclear war, the traitors who have destroyed America from within will be tried for war crimes and duly executed. Today, my three special topics are: topic number one, cosmospheres, cosmostrategy, and the ignored warnings of General Thomas Power. Topic number two, Soviet preparations to invade the United States. And topic number three, how events are converging toward nuclear holocaust. Topic number one. On a sleepy late spring day in June 1957, members of an engineering society gathered in Los Angeles to hear about the efforts of the United States Air Force in space technology. The speaker, General Thomas Power, P-O-W-E-R. The following month, General Power would become Commander-in-Chief of the Strategic Air Command, SAC. But on that day in June 1957, he was completing 3 years as head of the Air Force's Research and Development Command. As such, General Power was then America's leading authority on the overall military potentials of space. So his audience expected to hear about these potentials from General Power. But in General Power's own words, published 8 years later, he said, quote, "I had to disappoint them. Guided by official policy, I carefully avoided any reference to satellites, space vehicles, and man in space. Instead, I talked about the Air Force's high-altitude studies, the impact of solar phenomena on communications, and related subjects," unquote. Less than 4 months later, on October 4, 1957, mankind was thrust into the space age by the beep, beep, beep of Sputnik 1, launched by the Soviet Union. And thanks to the disgraceful official policies that muzzled General Power and others, the American people were caught totally off guard. 15 months ago, in audio letter 19, I told you the rest of the story about the so-called Sputnik 1 surprise, a disgrace which need never have happened. To General Power, the Sputnik shock itself was bad enough, but he drew from that experience even more important lessons for the future. To him, given the other military and technical facts in his possession, Sputnik 1 was only an omen of far more serious things to come. And he fervently believed that only an informed, aroused American public could prevent eventual disaster for America. So he decided to put his warnings into print. In April 1959, as the Eisenhower era was on the wane, General Power, commander of the Strategic Air Command, followed required procedures and submitted his book to the Defense Department for approval prior to publication. The book contained no military secrets, yet it was banned instantly by the Secretary of Defense. Unknown to General Power, America's secret rulers had already decided upon a complete revolution in America's military strategy to begin in 1961 with the new administration. It was to be a two-pronged strategy, half visible and half invisible. The visible part would involve the gradual weakening and disarmament of the United States, which our rulers would always sell to us as initiatives for peace, quote unquote, but which would actually lead to war. The hidden part of the new strategy, however, would involve the continued secret development of new superweapons with which the Soviet Union could be utterly destroyed in the war to come. And the centerpiece of this two-pronged strategy for world domination was to be America's moon program, sold to the public as a peaceful venture, but actually intended for military purposes. It is this two-pronged secret military scheme of our secret rulers that unraveled just 6 months ago on September 27, 1977. It is this scheme that led to America's disastrous defeat in the secret space battle of the Harvest Moon, which knocked out America's secret moon base in Copernicus Crater. And it is this scheme that would have been threatened by publication of General Power's book in 1959. In 1965, after General Power retired, he finally succeeded in having his book, Design for Survival, published in extensively revised form. The publisher was Coward McCann of New York, but the original banned version was never published. After nearly 20 years, I believe the time is long overdue for the American public to hear some of the things about which the late General Thomas Power tried in vain to give a warning. After considerable effort and expense, I have at last been able to obtain a copy of the original banned manuscript by General Power, which will be under lock and key by the time you hear this recording. As I read his words to you, keep in mind, please, that they were written 2 decades ago. Only in that way can you realize just how much is being kept from you by the federal government. On page 60 of the banned manuscript, General Power says that, quote, "Deterrence is the sum total of many diverse elements, which in combination serve to convince our enemies that if they choose to precipitate a nuclear war, the United States will survive and they will not," unquote. 3 years after General Power wrote these words, he was proven right in the Cuban Missile Crisis of 1962. But his book remained banned, so this lesson was not driven home in American minds, and true deterrence was gradually allowed to disappear. On page 67 of the banned manuscript, he speaks of a Soviet decision to start a war against the United States. Quote, "First, there must be adequate assurance that the war will result in a decisive victory for them and unconditional surrender on our part," unquote. A few lines later, he said, quote, "The second condition that must be satisfied before the Soviet rulers would undertake aggression against the United States is the assurance that they can prevent our retaliatory counterattack from inflicting unacceptable damage upon them," unquote. My friends, in light of these criteria, judge for yourself about the significance of the runaway Soviet military superiority over the United States. For example, consider just one small part of the picture, the incredibly massive Soviet civil defense program versus non-existent civil defense in the United States. Does it matter that according to government figures, the Soviet Union might lose 5 million people, while the United States could lose 160 million in a nuclear exchange? Or are government spokesmen right when they assure you this imbalance means nothing? On page 68 of the banned manuscript, General Power says that, quote, "An added problem is the reaction of the Russian people. There can be no doubt that in a nuclear war, they would accept heavy losses without protest, so long as they believed that the United States, not Russia, was responsible for the war," unquote. In light of this, my friends, where is Jimmy Carter's so-called tough talk against the Soviet Union lately really leading? Does he himself even know what he is saying? Already his words and those of Secretary of Defense Harold Brown have become the basis of an intense propaganda campaign inside Russia about the increasingly threatening posture of the United States. And some diplomats are already saying that Soviet-American relations are now the worst they have been since the Cuban crisis over 15 years ago. On page 141 of the banned manuscript, General Power says that since the Soviet Union must destroy both our military muscle and our power to rebuild that muscle, quote, "the objective of a Soviet attack would be a thorough destruction of the country," unquote. And on page 142, he gives a Soviet military authority's words, quote, "Atomic and hydrogen weapons alone, without the decisive operations of the ground forces, with their contemporary materiel, cannot decide the outcome of war," unquote. In other words, after the initial nuclear attack, an invasion of the United States will follow. Describing the true status of the extensive Soviet technological and industrial effort 2 decades ago, he said we were already in a neck-and-neck race. And on page 212, he warned of, quote, "the danger that the Soviets may pull ahead of us in the technological race, if they can maintain their present pace and we fail to accelerate ours. They are matching our military effort, although their economy is only about 40% of ours. Because of their ruthless methods and low living standards, they can buy more progress and military technology than we can buy for an equivalent amount. Most importantly, they are getting it a great deal faster than we do, unquote. And I continue with this very important quote of General Power. While we must advance painstakingly step by step, the Soviets use their uncanny technical intelligence to profit from our efforts, saving their own efforts to leapfrog over us to spectacular successes. What we try cautiously on a small scale, the Soviets often will do on a far bigger and more impressive scale, unquote. Looking ahead 20 years ago, General Power could clearly see that space warfare would revolutionize military strategy. Quoting from page 225 of his banned 1959 manuscript, "The old military mandate, take to the high ground, is as pertinent in the dawning space age as it ever was to the rifle-bearing soldier. In wars of the past, high ground meant elevations and hills measured in tens or hundreds of feet. Fighting downhill was always easier and more advantageous than fighting uphill. When the airplane became a tool of warfare, high ground meant thousands or later tens of thousands of feet. Again, the greater height or altitude represented an important advantage in aerial combat. As the struggle for the strategic advantage of the high ground continues, altitude above sea level gradually becomes distance from the earth, and limitless space beckons as the ultimate battlefield," unquote. Continuing on the same page, General Power penned the following prophetic words: "There can be no doubt that the strategic use of space will revolutionize military doctrine again as much and perhaps even more than the airplane. Distance on the surface of the earth will lose what little military significance it has left, because the earth itself will become merely the focal point for the space theater of operations. And the continued compression of time for both action and reaction will, in effect, assume the role of a new dimension in military strategy," unquote. 2 pages later, he summed it all up in the phrase, quote, "Whoever will control space will control the earth," unquote. In these crystal clear words of 19 years ago, General Power tried to let the American public in on the coming new era in military strategy based on space. He did not succeed, because our secret rulers did not want you to understand. But today, this new military dimension is a reality. Since the Battle of the Harvest Moon 6 months ago, it has become the exclusive domain of the Soviet Union, and they call it Cosmos Strategy. In his banned manuscript of 1959, and even in the revised version that was finally published 6 years later, General Power warned in clear terms about the strong prospects for surprise in our technological race with the Soviet Union. He pointed out that a long-range military planner of 1939 could not possibly have foreseen the jet bombers, supersonic fighters, hydrogen bombs, and intercontinental missiles of 1959. And because the pace of technological change is accelerating, he tried to warn that the very best projections possible in 1959 could likewise be rendered obsolete by unexpected, sudden new military developments. But General Power's warnings were silenced and ignored because they did not fit the two-pronged strategy of our secret rulers for world control that I mentioned earlier. As a result, America lost the most decisive battle of the 20th century, the Battle of the Harvest Moon, 6 months ago. And now, the cosmos strategy of the Soviet Union is like the nightmares of general power come true. One of the most startling weapons today in the cosmos strategic arsenal of the Soviet Union is the electrogravitic floating platform, or cosmosphere, as they call it. They are armed with charged particle beam weapons. And as I first revealed in Audio Letter 29 last December, they are responsible for the violent airquakes along the East Coast and elsewhere, which the federal government is trying frantically to explain away. As early as 1962, over 15 years ago, some of America's top military officers could see the threat of floating platforms on the technical horizon and wanted to start working on a defense against them. General Thomas Power, then commander of the Strategic Air Command, was one of these men. In the summer of 1962, the Cuban Missile Crisis was in gestation. But General Power was already looking ahead to a possible space Cuba of the future that would be even more serious. At a secret meeting at Maxwell Air Force Base, General Power described the floating platform concept that was already within reach of American technology. And he expressed frustration and worry over the refusal of the Kennedy administration to begin developing any defense against a potential Soviet version of these platforms. Already, the dismantling of America's military power under the guiding hand of then-Defense Secretary Robert McNamara was underway. In 1964, General Power retired after heading the Strategic Air Command for 7 years. In March 1965, 13 years ago this month, the revised version of his book, Designed for Survival, was published at last. And on pages 243 and 244, you will find a warning by General Power that points specifically to the floating Soviet cosmospheres that are now hovering over the United States and elsewhere worldwide. Beginning on page 243, General Power gives a warning of the urgent requirement of defense against a military threat from space. He says, quote, "An aggressor would make the fullest use of the element of surprise. This would apply to the timing of the attack, as well as to the employment of some radically new weapon or technique for which we are not prepared. It is quite possible that the Soviet surprise weapon would be an offensive space system, but beyond this assumption, we can only speculate," unquote. Further on page 244, he says, quote, "For instance, it is conceivable that we may wake up one morning and find a number of Soviet satellites floating in stationary orbits over every part of the United States," unquote. And a few words later, he emphasizes, quote, "We certainly must anticipate such a contingency, which is by no means far-fetched or far in the future, and make sure that we have operational defensive systems or measures to cope with it," unquote. There, my friends, you have it. Security restrictions prevented General Power from describing these hovering devices in detail in his published book. So he used a word for them that the public could most easily grasp, and that word is satellites. But as the former head of research and development for the United States Air Force, General Power knew very well that no true satellite can hover over any location in the United States. True satellites can hover only over locations on the Earth's equator. What General Power tried to warn us about 13 years ago are electrogravitic floating platforms, known today as cosmospheres. General Power's warnings created a temporary sensation in 1965, but in the end, they were ignored. One morning in December 1977, America did wake up with Soviet floating cosmospheres overhead. and earthquakes began shaking houses and breaking windows, in a mild illustration of what they can do. Today, there are 70 Soviet cosmospheres deployed worldwide, and we have no defense against them.